Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th day of November, Anno Domini 2020, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news first. However, it's a very important day. It's a birthday. It's a birthday today. I'll give you a hint. He's a superhero. His first name is Clark
Kent.
He has a fortress of solitude. And he is a man of some sort of metal. Who is it?
Mighty Mouse.
Nope.
Here I come to save the day.
Here I come to save the day.
I can remember as a kid rushing home.
Wait a minute. It's not Clark Kent. Yeah. It's not Superman. It's Clark Savage Jr. Doc Savage, the man of bronze, first name Clark, superhero, Fortress of Solitude, and his pulp books came out months before Superman debuted in the comics. So... that's my trivia for the day.
No, I remember as a kid, though, and a lot of folks don't realize, you know, we used to rush home to watch some of these characters on TV because it, you know, they used to have Superman, and we were talking about Lloyd Bridges and Sea Hunt and Sky King,
and then I saw it
and Rin Tin Tin.
Oh yeah,
Lassie,
Sergeant Preston of the Yukon.
Lassie and there was just so many.
High in a mountaintop above a small Midwestern city stands a citadel of truth and justice. It is the home of Jet Jackson.
Yep. Sky King.
Sky King, I remember very well. And his niece Penny.
Yep.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Anyway, let's get to some computery things, shall we? Microsoft, here's a shock. It's 0 day. Here at Soundbites.
Should I be sitting down?
Yeah, probably, sure, because it's going to be a shock. It's going to be a shock. Microsoft has confirmed that an unpatched zero-day vulnerability in the Windows operating system affecting every version from Windows 7 through Windows 10 is being actively targeted. In fact, that's the definition of a zero-day attack, an attack that's just been discovered that's already being actively exploited when they found it. Microsoft was first informed of the vulnerability by Google's Project Zero team, a dedicated unit comprised of leading vulnerability hunters, which tracks down those so-called zero-day security bugs. Because Project Zero had identified that the security problem was being actively exploited in the wild by attackers, it gave Microsoft a deadline of just 7 days to fix it before disclosure, which is standard. Microsoft failed to issue a security patch. There's a shock within that, for them, hugely restrictive time frame. Linux had a patch out in a day, by the way, for their last one.
Slackers.
Yeah, exactly. Less than a day. And Microsoft failed to issue a security patch within that time frame, and Google went ahead and published details of the zero-day vulnerability. The bug itself sits within the Windows kernel cryptography driver, which is cng.sys, and could allow an attacker to escalate the privileges they have when accessing a Windows machine. Simply put, it's a memory buffer overflow problem, just like all of them, that could give an attacker admin-level control of the targeted Windows computer. While attackers are known to be actively targeting Windows systems right now, that doesn't mean your system is going down. While Microsoft has confirmed that the reported attack is real, it also suggests that it is limited in who is being targeted so far. This is not, at least as of yet, a widespread, broad-sweep exploit. Microsoft says it has no evidence of any indication of widespread exploits, but they'd say that anyway. Microsoft has released Windows 10 build 20251 with a selection of welcome fixes, but none of those fixes address this 0 day. As we know, Microsoft tends to only issue patches once a month, so you've still got some time before you can feel safe again. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is new Windows Zero Day attack. Your choices are, oh no, what, another one? I'm disgusted. Windows. And, of course, others. So far, we have 55 votes, and what, another one as well in the lead, followed by Windows. If you do say other, we would like you to tell us what you meant by that. So you can head over to our website at soundbites.org. Again, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And down on the left of the forums, excuse me, down on the right, I don't even know my own website at this point. Down on the right, under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 7NOV20. New Windows Zero Day attack, and I'll say later when I read the other news, Apple also is having zero day attacks. Google's also having zero day attacks. So it's every major company being hit. But at any rate, you can also, of course, and this may come as a shock to you, but you can give us a call 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Recently, Microsoft fixed a zero day that was known for 2 years.
Yeah,
and they said that's not a zero day. That's intended operation. Anybody could attach malicious software to the end of a signed application, and it would say, "Oh, signed application, no problem. Mm-hmm. I'll run it."
Yep, that's exactly right. That's the problem with signed applications.
Yeah, yeah.
So you could attach something on the end of it, and it didn't need to be re-signed. That is not supposed to be intended procedure.
Right, you think?
Maybe intended by you, but it's not what I would have intended had I been writing it.
Yeah.
At any rate, the idea here is that your machines are vulnerable, but you know that. You're running Windows. I mean, they're always vulnerable. So you're right, and it is a threat, but it's not a super prevalent threat at the moment. You should be wary. You should keep checking your machine for odd behavior. If it's running slow, then dance a security tango. If there's odd activity, although there's always odd activity under Windows, you should run the security tango. When you're not using your machine, at least take it off the internet, if not shut it down entirely.
It seems like every month is a record number of fixes, 120 fixes this month.
Yeah. Check your, if you have your own router attached to your ISP's router, then you should check the logs on that. And if you aren't running logs, you should turn logs on.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's different for every type of router, so I can't specifically tell you how to do it. But the manual that actually did come with your router should be able to tell you how to do that.
And or if you don't have the manual, go online. They're all there.
They're all there.
And within that, you can download the PDF and do a search.
Right.
On where that would – you could literally query where to go into the PDF and find that information to
right.
do.
Right. So, yeah, folks, be very aware that, you know, it's not the late 70s, early 80s anymore. When you're doing computer stuff, you have to be your own system administrator. And that means not only keeping your machines up to date and fixing little problems and this and that, but also being proactive and preemptory and looking at your logs and checking not just the logs in your machine, but also the logs in your router and everywhere else, and doing that is important, and you should definitely be doing that right now.
Due diligence.
Do your due diligence. All right, we should probably go to the phones. Why not? We've had Bill patiently waiting from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Bill?
Hey guys. Thanks for taking my call. By the way, not exactly patient, but close. So, just a blast from the past, you mentioned Sky King. Do you remember the name of his plane?
Oh, it'll come to me. No, I don't. No, what is it?
Songbird.
The Songbird, of course!
Yeah. More importantly, what kind of plane was it?
Oh, I don't know.
A Cessna
310. Cessna 310.
Yeah, originally it was Cessna.
It was originally a T50, then a 310.
Yeah, okay. I remembered it as a 310.
My Google foo is strong.
I have a computer question.
Yes, sir. Oh, computers. We can do that, too. Sure.
Yeah. So
we're multitasking.
I recently bought a Lenovo SmartTab M8.
Uh-huh.
And I want to know your suggestions for security software.
That's an Android tablet, so I would suggest, they all have it now. So if you're an AVG fan or, you know, whatever antivirus you prefer, you can run that on there. I tend to still like Lookout.
Okay.
Lookout. For several reasons, because it originally included a number of things that nobody else had, but now they all do, you know, find my lost device and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, if you're already a fan of AVG or any of the others, you can certainly use that on your Android now as well.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I typically have from your doing the security tangle, I have malware bytes and super anti-spyware on everything else. And,
right.
But you're saying add to that?
Well, one of the issues with the tablet OSs is they are very hard to actually get malware onto if you only use the right app stores.
Yeah,
right.
The biggest threat is fake malware messages. That's an ad on a website that says you're infected and run this program or call this phone number. And those are all just fake and can be closed and ignored. So what we are seeing is that I know Malwarebytes has one for iOS. I'm assuming Android too. They have a basically a URL scanner that when you try to open a web page, it will scan the page to make sure there isn't anything malicious on it already. Because the way the ad networks are working, it's very easy to put an ad in the system that shows up on a legitimate website.
Right.
So it's actually called an ad scanner?
A URL scanner, really.
A URL scanner.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
But Malwarebytes does that. There's a bunch that do it. So any one of those that you're comfortable with, that you're already familiar with, most of those have Android apps. And so you should use whichever one you're comfortable with. They're all pretty good these days.
Okay. That's good news.
Yep.
Especially from a security standpoint, which everybody's always asking.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Yep.
Okay, thanks very much, guys. I appreciate your help. You got a super show.
Thank you.
And we listen to it religiously every week.
Thank you. We like that. You don't need to kneel, though. You could probably just sit.
Oh, thanks.
And we only take up a collection twice a year.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Way to go. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
Yep.
All right, we did get, when we're done there, we got a text then.
Well, what,
Before you do that, I want to thank everybody. Steve raised the point. I want to thank everybody who were so generous as to donate. We met our goal early, and so we stopped the pledge drive early, which we promised we would do every time, and we did.
Can't thank people enough.
And we can't thank people enough for each and every one of you who became a member or re-upped or whatever to the Soundbites family. We are most appreciative. And to the rest of you freeloaders, enjoy.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, relating to security on the mobile devices, you may have heard of the Epic lawsuit from Epic.
Epic.
Fortnite.
Bada bing, try the veal.
Published by Epic, is suing Apple and Google because they don't want to pay for a cut in the App Store.
Right.
They make $1 million a day.
Right.
And they don't want to lose 30%. And one of the arguments is if you sold that through distribution, you'd lose 90%.
Right.
And so these 30% deals are actually much better. But one of the security things is on Android devices, you can turn off security and install an app from a non-trusted source.
Right.
And they call that sideloading.
Right.
And when Fortnite first came out, they offered sideloading so that they didn't have to pay Google to be in the App Store.
Right.
And within a couple hours, there were hundreds of fake Fortnites that were telling you how to sideload Fortnite.
Right.
So you know, people are trying to Google how to play this game, and they search, you know, sideload game, and they get a fake game. And Fortnite eventually said, oh, okay, we'll go into the store and pay Google the cut.
Right.
And that's part of the security of both the Apple Store and the Google Play Store, is they vet the apps before they go in. Every now and then something will sneak in because it doesn't initially claim, well, it doesn't say what it really does, and it gets updated and something happens, and so you're always hearing about apps are getting removed from the
store.
There
are thousands of apps an hour added to all the app stores. And even the automated systems that Apple and Google have in place can't keep up. It sometimes takes a couple hours for them to get to a new app and test it.
Especially, you know, if somebody's trying to, say, pirate something, they can take an app and, oh, if it gets pulled down there, just rename it.
Yeah.
And then put it up as something different. And then they got it, like you said, it's that revolving door. It's constantly going around and around and around and trying to keep up with it. It's a daunting task to even undertake.
But it is better for the customer, the end user, to not need to worry about that type of security problems.
Right.
Yep.
So that's going to be an interesting argument in the case, is that we don't want to pay our cut. Well, because there's security, you know.
Right. Yep. Part of what your 30% goes is, part of it sure is for storage, but that's minimal. But a lot of it is for the security of the apps are checked, the apps are verified.
Yeah.
And
that's
worth something.
Yeah.
And Fortnite, Epic of all people, should know that after what happened with the fake sideloads.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. We had a text come in and it says, has anyone had Bluetooth come on automatically after they power on their Chromebook? I have sent this bug report to Google. Recently updated, didn't solve problem.
We have seen phones that after you load an OS, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi turn themselves back on, load an OS update. I suppose that could be what's happening on the Chromebook. The minor update loaded in and Bluetooth turned itself back on?
There are apps that will use Bluetooth that will, for example, search for a Bluetooth connection.
Yeah.
And if Bluetooth is off, they will turn it on.
It should ask, though.
Well, you may have said okay when you installed the thing, right?
Yeah.
That's when it asks.
Yep.
It's not going to ask every time.
And that's the whole trouble. Again, just like, you know, PCs. People don't take the time when they're installing something, how it will sit, you know, the programs will ask, do you want us to put this in your startup folder?
Right.
A lot of folks get click happy and they go, yeah. And then they wonder why their resources and everything else are down. It's because all this other junk is being loaded.
Right.
That's not needed, and that's same true with the Chromebook app.
But there is a bug report for this very thing that was just put in 6 days ago. So if they determine it is a bug, they'll fix it. But again, it may be if your system, for example, if you've connected your phone to your Chromebook and said, for example, when I first open up my Chromebook, it searches for my phone, and if my phone is unlocked, it will unlock.
Yeah.
Well, in order to do that, it has to have Bluetooth. So even if I turn Bluetooth off,
it will then turn Bluetooth on
so that it can unlock. So if the texter has done something along those lines, so there's a million ways that you can have the thing automatically do Bluetooth seeking. And if you have turned any one of those on, then yes, your system will turn on Bluetooth automatically when you boot it up.
Yep. Apple added some higher security when apps try to ask for Bluetooth or ask for certain things, it will pop up. The choices were basically, it used to be always or never. They added the third choice once.
Yep. So did Google. But
yeah. And people started noticing it when Facebook said, Facebook wants to use your Bluetooth. What the heck does Facebook want Bluetooth for? So it can
Facebook
track you better.
Wants everything.
Track you better with Bluetooth beaconing at every Bluetooth thing you happen to go past.
Yep.
No, Facebook, you do not get access to my Bluetooth.
That's exactly right. So yeah, one of the issues we're finding is that these things do so much now that we often say yes on every device, not just Chromebooks, but on every device, we often say yes to things and then forget we said yes.
Yep.
Right. Or we don't understand the implications, or as Dave said, we get click happy.
Mm-hmm.
So really, that's all you can, all you can do is at this point, is go through each of your settings, not just apps, but also the settings in your operating system, and see which ones you said yes to, which ones you turned on.
Is there a unified a privacy setting where you can see who's asked for what?
To that level, no.
Yeah.
No, that would be nice. There may be an app you can throw in that does that, but I haven't looked for it because I'm fairly restrictive in what I allow a thing to do. But yeah, so for example, I do my Bluetooth is on and it will open my Chromebook for me if my phone is unlocked. But I've researched that and I know that in that particular case, it is not accessible to everybody. So it won't auto pair or it won't, any of that stuff. So if you were to look on your, try to pair a set of headphones or something to it, I don't know what you would try, but it won't do it.
Yep.
Because it's not in pairing mode. It's only on.
Another good thing for folks to do, if they don't have the Chromebook and say they got a Windows machine, is literally go over in the right-hand corner. There's usually a triangle, an up arrow.
Yep.
If they click on that, they will see all the items that are automatically being started when they turn the machine on. And if it's some of that stuff isn't what you really need, you can right-click on it and usually disable it.
Right.
Because, again, that's where when I was saying click happy, that's what it does. Is when you install this program, it will put in a startup.
And some of them don't even ask in. That's only been only recently they started asking.
Yeah, and they'll put it in the startup menu. So you've got all this extra baggage being loaded that you really don't need, and you could it doesn't eliminate the program. So say, one that we just love, Adobe. Adobe used to love to load itself up all the time. Are you using it all the time? No. So you could go over and right-click on it and say, don't start it every time. And then that way you've got more resources available for your machine. And it's not slowing things down because that's what they do. Because they're always looking do you need me yet? Do you need me yet?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but almost every Windows machine comes with a trial copy of Office. And Office starts up an amazing amount of crap in the background. Oh. Just absolutely amazing. So if you're not using Office, then you can go in and turn off that preload.
Yeah.
And that actually saves you lots of memory, lots of startup time, and lots of cycles. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. And we have Mark from Greece, New York on the phone. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hey, you got your sunscreen on?
I do. I have my pith helmet. I actually have a pith helmet. I should wear it.
I'm going to try to go fly in tomorrow.
Yay! Yeah.
I haven't put the planes away yet. That's good.
That's good.
Well, I finally cut the lawn for the last time because I figured...
Yeah, it's the last time.
Well, we've had the frost, so that cuts usually any growing and all that.
I did put the lawnmower away.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was like double purpose. I wound up putting the stabilizer in it, filling the tank up, quick doing my 10-minute lawn... it's right. It takes. And I was able to put it away for the winter.
There you go. So anyway, Mark, do you by any chance have a computer question?
Oh, sure. Ah. Actually, it's not a question. I just wanted to, I found a little neat piece of software that's free and thought I would throw it your way, see what you think of it. You may even know it. I'm not sure. It's called WinAero Tweaks, Aero, E-A-E-R-O. And it is neat because it does a lot of things that you would normally have to do in the registry.
Yeah, Aero is the GUI, essentially, part of Windows. It's mm-hmm. it's the Aero interface, A-E-R-O, you're right.
You're right.
And it's the thing that gives you pretty colors and transparencies on your windows and all that other yada yada. Well, so it's a program called WinAero Tweaks, huh?
Right, and you can go in and you can do a few things in the appearance, and you can go in and you can change your context menu, what comes up in it, what you want to take out. Normally, a lot of that stuff you have to do in the registry.
Right. When we certainly recommend not to screw around in the registry.
Yeah,
right.
We don't advocate that at all.
Right.
So, you know, and then when you uncheck it, well, it changes that registry value for you because it knows where it is and what it's doing.
Right. Nice.
The coolest thing I like about it is you know what a pain in the patoot it is to get into safe mode, right?
Yes.
We all hate it. Well, now I put it in with one little check. It's right in my right click when I'm on my desktop below personalizations. It says safe mode.
Nice.
And you can go into safe mode right there, networking, command line, whatever you want, right there. You press it. And it reboots and goes into safe mode without having to do anything else.
Nice.
It's free right there.
Well, that sounds very nice. And they're up to 0.18.
Looks like it's a collection of his other apps before. He bundled them all together.
Yeah.
It is wonderful.
A combination.
And they don't have any dates on it, but it looks like it's pretty new. Nice. Very nice.
I love it. And there's so many tweaks. And all I would suggest people to do is if they want to mess around with it, just remember how many categories there are and jot down what category you are in and the name of the thing that you tweaked, you know, that you checked or unchecked.
Right. The issue is always the fact that now you're responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a very powerful tool in your hand. Make sure it doesn't become a weapon.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it for the light of heart.
Right.
It's very simple if you track yourself.
Right.
Well,
right.
That's the key, though.
And that's
a lot
the
of
thing.
Folks
right.
do it after the fact.
Right. When you make a change, this is part of being a system administrator, when you make any change in your system, write down what you did. So if you have to go back and undo it, or if you have to redo it at a later date,
yeah.
I still, to this day, when I put up a new machine, I create a site book.
Mm-hmm.
What I usually do is I've used it for a long time, is Snagit.
Yep.
And I usually have that running. So if I'm going to change something, I quick pull up Snagit, take a picture of it.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And then that way it sees what subdirectory or anything else that I'm in, and it saves it as a picture.
I'm stealing that one.
That's a good idea. I will say that WinAero Tweaker was last. It's WinAero Tweaker, it looks mm-hmm. like. Last updated on the 25th of October, so it's clearly an active product.
Another thing, though, Mark, that's also good. Like, if you're setting up, say, a program,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you've got to do different settings and all that, I found this very helpful with a lot of my ham programs that I'm setting stuff up and I'm not sure what. So I take pictures
mm-hmm.
with the Snagit, and then that way, how did I do that? And I can quick reference it, and it saved my butt a number of times if I had to go reset something up and put it in there.
I'm sure it did because, you know, there's a lot of things I do all the time. And as I'm getting older now, things that I've done all the time, it's like, how do I do that?
CRS.
Yeah, how do I do that? I mean, mm-hmm. I've done it 100 times. How do I do that? And I end up going on Google and going, I remember how to do this.
Right. Well, like you say, you just use Snagit, take a quick picture of it, you got it there, and you can always refer back to it.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to steal that one. That's a great idea.
No problem.
Nice. And you just have to remember where you put all those pictures.
Yeah.
Well, what I do is... I save it to the desktop. Yeah. And then that way I save it and I can view it. And if I want to keep it, I drag it off to another folder. Then that gets uploaded to the cloud.
Right.
Yep. That's where my pictures go too. So.
Right.
Yep.
I keep
so that's
my.
What I would do. I would drag them into my picture file where they get saved, and then I've got them.
Yep. Right. Of course, I'm using Linux, so a lot of the stuff I do is from the command line.
Yep.
So I just copy and paste the command line into my site book. And I say, you know, I added this app. Here's how I did it. This is what it does.
Mm-hmm. As long as you're documenting, that's the whole trouble. Yep. And so some folks will get so anxious, you know, they get going at it, and they forget to write down the steps. And then they get to the point, oh, yeah, it's working. How did I get here?
Yep.
And that's
one of the things I love about Linux is there's a command that lets you make a list of all the programs that are installed. It's just a command, so you don't have to remember and write anything down. Makes a list of all the programs that are installed. You can then go to another machine and use that same command with a couple of different parameters to put all those programs on that machine.
Oh, that's nice, too. That's easy. That makes things easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, if I can just say one more thing, this one's not quite as complex. There's another cool tool for Windows that can help you with visuals, and if you want, you know, some sort of meters on your desktop.
Right.
It's a program called Rain Meter, if you're familiar.
What's it called?
Rain Meter. RAINMETER.
Oh, Rain Meter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great little tool, a lot of fun. You know, if you want to, you know, if you want a few little gadgets on your desktop and want to know what your hard drives are doing or what your CPU is doing.
Right. So it's not actually a rain meter.
Right.
Because you usually want to keep rain away from your computer.
Yeah, there's that, yeah.
So a rain meter should say zero at all times.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. It's another great one. It especially when someone wants to ask you, well, how much RAM do you have in there? I don't know. Well, it's right here. I got 16 gigs of RAM.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What processor do you have? I got an i3 7100.
Right.
You know, it's right here. And easy to bring up. You don't even have to start it with the computer if you don't want to. You can just put a little icon. And start it when you want to.
Neat.
Cool.
So it's another cool one, and it changes some visuals around on your computer, too, if you want.
Right.
Okay?
Very cool.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, have fun.
Sometimes, bye-bye.
Sometimes those tweaking commands get you into trouble when you forget you've done it or you do something accidentally. We had a customer once where they brought their computer in, and whenever they hit the S, the computer beeped at them.
Huh?
But Shift S worked, so it's the key's okay. So why? We finally figured out there's a speak command to speak selected text.
Uh-huh.
Normally, it's like Control Shift S, something weird that you don't accidentally type. They changed it to S.
Oh,
so every time you hit S, whatever the cursor was on,
while selected text, it would read.
Well, if there's no selected text,
it beeps.
Nice.
And then they couldn't ever type an S because that's what they picked for some other function.
Yeah.
Right. And if you had a site book,
yeah,
you might remember.
Might remember you did that. You changed the key for the.
Right.
We run into that in our office. There's a dictation command that's usually you push the F'n key twice.
Right.
Yeah.
The F'n key.
And someone at our office keeps changing that to be the command key. Well, I use the command key for so many commands that dictation keeps turning on all the time.
Well, aren't you a part owner of this company? Shouldn't you be able to tell your employees to not do that?
It's not the employees.
Oh, wow. So by someone. Okay,
the higher
got
up.
Got it. All right, we'll move away from that, and I will now read. I will now read a news item. Remember, I said it's zero day here. With everyone's mind currently elsewhere, it's easy to overlook a little prompt on your iPhone telling you it's time to update. That would be a mistake. On November 5th, Apple introduced the latest series of updates to iOS, and included, along with the 117 new emoji.
That's the real reason to update.
Which is what everybody's focused on. Exactly right. Are some very important security patches. Specifically, The fixes included an iOS 14.2 address, real security vulnerabilities being actively exploited right now. That means someone is currently using them against iPhone owners. Yes, more zero-day vulnerabilities. And all you people who think that your iPhones are unable to be hacked, unable to be damaged, everybody else is laughing up their sleeves at you right now, or maybe not even up their sleeves. We know this because Ben Hawks, the technical lead of Google's Project Zero bug hunting group, was kind enough to let the world know via tweet that Apple had patched the vulnerabilities. One, and again, Google does the same thing. They, Google's Project Zero actively seeks out exploits like this. And if it's a zero day, that means it's already actively in the field. They give the manufacturer 7 days to fix it before they will announce it. And Apple did fix it within the 7 days. So what he announced was that it was fixed, mm-hmm. as opposed to with Microsoft when they announced it's a bug and Microsoft hasn't done squat about it at this point. One of them, and there is more than one of them, a remote code execution vulnerability, is particularly noteworthy because it means, just like it sounds, that a hacker, criminal, or government could remotely run code on your phone. That is bad. Thankfully, there is a fix. As long as you have an iPhone 6S or more recent model, all you have to do is update your device. One other piece of relatively good news is that even though we know these exploits are actively being used, according to Shane Huntley of Google's threat analysis group, the attacks using them didn't have to do with the U.S. presidential election. So considering that the last few weeks, that's pretty much all anybody has done on their phones at all. They were not actively exposed to this bug. Apple on Thursday also issued updates in the form of iPadOS 14.2, watchOS 7.1, watchOS 6.2.9, watchOS 5.3.9, macOS Catalina 10.15.17, tvOS 14.2, and iOS 12.4.9. And that last one was for iPhones older than the 6S. So go ahead and hit that update button and know that you're getting more than just a new emoji. And like you said, the emoji is the real reason people have probably already updated.
Well,
so have you updated? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Well, they've been a big breakout lately of some hospitals and their systems being overtaken, held for ransom.
Yep.
That they're, and it's not just in one area. It was across one end of the U.S. to the other, and these hospitals were being held for ransom as far as all the records and everything else.
National Healthcare in Britain got hit, too, and most of the health services got that held for ransom.
So they're trying to shut that down and get that, you know, and get a good handle on it, but they know where it's coming from, so they're working on it. But that's the whole trouble. Even in that arena, folks, it's a game of leapfrog.
Right.
They put up all these high fences. They find a way to get around it, under it, over it, one way or another. And then they try to continue on. And then they got to put up another set of fences. So it's ongoing. It's something that, and just like we tell you with your security, it's not something you just want to put on once and just say, oh, okay, I'm protected. You got to do, again, keep up with the updates and scan once in a while. Like we've said before, you know, if you say you're running super anti-spyware or malware bytes and they don't run automatically, what I've always suggested, when you come home from dinner, go over to your computer, turn that on, or if you're at work, you know, or before you go to work, start the scan, and by the time you get home, the scan would be done. All you have to do is leave the machine on, turn the monitor off. That way it can scan automatically for you. You come home. Oh, it's already done. You just have it. If it finds anything, which it usually does, have it erase it. And then the next day, do the next one. And get in the habit of doing that, say, every Monday and Wednesday. Do one on Monday, do one on Wednesday. And just get into that routine, and you'll be able to have less headaches, you know, for yourself.
And for those of us who leave our machines on 24/7, you can set it up to happen at like 3 in the morning.
Just when you go to bed.
Just when I, exactly. That is exactly correct. And so you can do that fairly easily as well. And those are the things that, again, those are really system administrator things.
Mm-hmm.
But we are all our own system administrators now. And as far as these ransom things go, I get that, you know, I'm not a system administrator anymore. I've retired, but I would be embarrassed to be hit by a ransomware thing that I can't fix because I don't have a backup.
Mm-hmm.
Now I realize that when you have, particularly like in a hospital, when you have 15,000 disparate machines that aren't all necessarily easily backupable, that you've got a, that you've got an issue. And I get that. I do get that. But for most machines, the way to solve the ransomware issue is to have an offsite backup that can't be touched. And that's easy enough to do.
Yep.
And once you have that, if somebody hits your machine, you just restore that backup. And if you do that backup every single day,
you're gold. You're golden.
You're golden.
All right, we did get it.
On that note, the Garmin GPS company got hit with a ransomware attack a few months ago, and it's rumored that they paid the $10 million ransom because that would be cheaper than restoring the backup on 50,000 computers.
Yeah.
All right, we got a text that came in and says, "Hi, Dave. When you said Snagit, how do you identify a given picture is for you so you know what it is used for down the road? After a while, you'll get a lot of pictures that you have try and remember what they are for." Well, that's very simple. Once you take Snagit and you select a, say it, with this, it's great. In the Snagit, you can select an area, and you know it'll have it take a picture. It then asks you, "What do you want to label it?" And I put it relative to what I'm working on. So if I'm working on, say, a particular radio or program, I label it with that, and then put part of the label, because you know your labels don't have to be short. It's not like the old days; they got to be 7 characters.
Right.
You can put it in there, or 8, and put it in there, and put it in a description, and you can put those in various folders. So I created a bunch of folders for my different radios and different programs, and within the radio, that program might be used on this radio and that radio. I do separate pictures.
Right.
And they're labeled and they're in that subfolder.
The other thing that I would suggest people do is also as part of the name, the label, the name of the file, include the date.
Yep.
The way I do it is the 2-digit year, the 2-digit month, and the 2-digit day. That way when I sort them alphabetically, the newest ones are on top and they go straight down. So if I've taken 3 pictures of the front panel on this radio program, I will see them in chronological order, and I know which one is newest.
Yeah, and the other thing nice about Snagit, too, is, you know, well, sure, you can, you know, take the, you know, the picture of it. Once you get it into Snagit, you can do, which I've used a lot, is add other features like arrows and putting in text. So there's more information right within that picture. You know, you're not just limited to the picture. I can point, all right, yeah, here's where these boxes I checked, and then I put a little bubble next to it and stating, I can put more information why I checked these boxes and highlight also. You can do circles and all that. There's a lot of features in it that it's a great program, and I've used it for a long time.
One of the things that, I do with my sitebook is I do much – there's a similar application for Linux, and so I use that to take pictures as well and drop them right in the sitebook, and that makes it doubly good. So I have my text, which reminds me what I did and how I did it and why I did it, and then the picture to show me exactly where.
And the Mac has a lot of that built in that people don't often realize it's in there. We've talked about screenshots for years. We would take a picture of the screen. But you can also do just a window. You can do just a region. There's a bunch of different key combinations that work. Right now, Command-Shift-5 is the newest combination that shows you all of the other options you have. So that and you can do audio and video recording of the screen with the QuickTime player. So one of those hidden features that people may not know about is already built in right there.
And you can do that on Chromebook too, by the way.
Yep.
You can take screenshots not only of the screen itself, but also of an area.
I think
of the screen.
Windows 10 has it. I think it's called what, Snapchat?
Well, Windows always had that print screen button that in the early days it would print the screen.
Literally, but now
to,
they got
the
a
printer.
Utility. I
now
think
it, it saves it as a picture on your clipboard and then you open, you know, paste paint it and paste it somewhere. Yeah.
But like I said, the Snag, it's just
extra utilities for
yep.
people
yeah.
that need it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. So you can take a screenshot. You can take a screenshot of just a piece of the screen on a Chromebook as well. Yep. So all of those things are available on every operating system, and it's easy enough to use. You just have to know what you're doing and do it.
Yep.
It's again, you're your own system administrator. You've got nobody to blame but yourself when you when things go wrong and you can't fix them.
And many times, tech support will love to have a screenshot of the error message.
Yeah.
You know, how many times have we asked, what was the message? Oh, I don't remember.
Right. Well, take a screenshot.
Well, it said something about this. What's the exact wording
right.
of the...
Because there's 50 that say something about this.
Yeah.
Which one did you get?
Yeah.
You know, particularly if it says error number something or other, that number is actually important.
Yeah.
All right. That music tells us you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but do not go away because we've got another hour of this nonsense coming up. We'll have a lot more Dave Enright, a lot more Steve Ray, way too much Nick Francesco, and as much of you as you can possibly stand. Yes, you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, or text us at 585-205-8887. We'll be right back with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. It's the top of the hour, and we'll be right back.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And again, truly grateful to you that we are able to continue to be member-supported and to continue to stay on the air. Jazz 90.1. And of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-205-8887. And we have Sandra from Rochester on the line. Hi, Sandra. What's up?
Hi. I have a question. I'm building a web page. And I've got a submit button for a questionnaire at the bottom of the web page. My problem is I'm not sure how to get it to work to be able to test it out. Do I have to be on a server for it to test? Or is there a way to do the HTML or the CSS or JavaScript to make it work?
Generally speaking, you need some sort of server connectivity of some sort in order to have that questionnaire the answers from that questionnaire go somewhere, like whether you're sending them to a database or just a page of some sort. So you do need to have them go somewhere.
And most hosting providers give you a test server address so you can do tests like this before you put it on your live server.
Right.
Okay. I built it totally from scratch on my own. I went to school for it.
Oh, great.
And, yeah, so I don't have a host or anything, that, you know, nothing like GoDaddy or anything like that. Is there a server situation where I could go on and use it, or do I have to get something to pay on it?
I don't know of anybody who does a free site. Okay. You need it because you need a domain name, which you have to pay for.
Can you load Apache right. on the computer?
Let me get there. Okay. But so you like I said, you need some kind of server, but you can load Apache on your own computer and turn it into a server. Or if you've got a Raspberry Pi, you can put it on that on your network, or a second machine and put it on that on your network. But you do need some form of server. Now, Apache, A-P-A-C-H-E, like the dance.
Because it was full of patches. It's Apache server.
It's Apache server. that's true. That's why they named it that. Is free and is available for anything. So if you're mostly doing this to keep your skills up and to do some testing and stuff like that, putting your own Apache server on your own machine is a very good way to do that.
Okay, yeah. I'm actually keeping my skills up, one. Two, doing this for somebody. But I just needed to make sure that submit button was actually going to work before we went to putting it out there on the web.
You know,
so
I get that.
I was saying.
The way I do that is with my various websites. You do have to have a website out there for other people to see.
Right.
And that does mean getting a domain name and having a hosting and all of that. But one of the things that I tend to do is when I first start a website, I put up just a under construction page, and then I do everything in a subdirectory like test.
Mm-hmm.
So you would say, my.com/test, and there's your website. And when it's ready, then I move it out of test to the main page.
Oh, okay. That's also a good idea. I think I'll try the Apache because I just wanted to test it there before we get it, because, I'm still I've got the majority of everything done, my drop downs and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of neat, too, because it helps you understand what web servers are trying to do and how they work, and that can make your code even better.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's
right.
where down the road, like Nick was saying, though, you might want to look into getting a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, I wrote that down, so I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, those, you can get a Raspberry Pi and get that up and running for under $50.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be a slow one, okay? It's not going to be a speedy, the 50, you can get a $100 one that's speedy, but you can get a $50 one that's not speedy, but it will do everything you want to do. It'll just be a little bit slower.
And it will handle one simultaneous connection
pretty well. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You won't want to put 50 people on it, but it'll handle one.
For your purposes, and like you say, since you're just trying to get through all this, it's a cheap way for you to not have a heck of a lot of investment and also learn Raspberry Pi. It's a very easy system to do. And like I say, and it's very versatile for you.
And it's a Linux-based system, so most of the websites that are out there are based on Linux. So you would be able to transfer your skill set from one to the other easily.
Okay, that's good.
And you can buy a Raspberry Pi from raspberrypi.org or from canakit.com, C-A-N-A-K-I-T, and Adafruit, Fruit, or any one of 100 places. And they range everywhere from a few bucks, which don't do much, up to about $100. The newest Raspberry Pi 400 is actually a pretty fast machine inside a keyboard.
Oh, okay.
And it comes with a mouse and the power supply and a cable to connect it to an HDMI TV or monitor. So for $100, you've got everything you need except the monitor.
Oh, okay.
It's a fast.
What I need, I'd probably just do 50. Just be to test it out. Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, you can find full kits.
Okay, well, I'm glad I called you guys because we were sitting here trying to figure that one out. I wasn't sure if I needed to have the an actual server or not, but I was kind of thinking that's what I would have needed. So thank you so much for the information on the Apache. I'll try that first.
Excellent. Have fun.
Thank you. I am having fun. It's been a while since I did one. So, good for you.
Tell you what, do us a favor. Call back. Once you get it up and running, let us know how you make out.
Oh, I will. I will. We listen to you every Saturday. So
that's what we like to hear.
That's what we want to hear.
Thanks, Andre.
Have a wonderful day. Thanks for answering my question.
You too. Keep smiling.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, the fact is that a web server is, there's no magic there. It's just generally an Apache server. There are others, Tomcat and a couple of others.
Nginx is actually pulling ahead of Apache in installed
base. Nginx, yeah. N-G-I-N-X.
G-N-I-X.
N-G-N-I-X.
Is it?
Yeah, N-G-I-N-X.
Yeah,
Nginx.
Oh, I heard that, but I never made the connection to the spelling. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yes, it is. It is pulling ahead of Apache. So, Apache. Yeah. Either one is pretty easy to install, and they're compatible and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah,
we did have one more text come in, and bear with me on this one. It says, "Hi Dave, didn't someone call in last week that said they didn't want the blur on the sign in screen? Winero, Winaero, Tweaker." Can turn that off.
WinAero, the thing we were talking about earlier, can turn off that blur. Nice.
I looked through our question list. I didn't see someone asking about blur, but if you were, it's there.
Yeah, we got it.
Somebody did somewhere. I remember
it's a blur
that.
To us?
I don't remember. It's a blur to us. But let's head back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Yeah, hey, I just want to ask you guys a question about my phone keeps bugging me every time I turn it on to download pulse, turn it on, download pulse, now, blah, blah. Is that, I talked to somebody about it briefly, and they said, the premise was, well, the cloud isn't secure and can be hacked, so pulse is, I guess, the greatest thing since sliced bread for security. Supposedly that's their premise is. But is that for just industrial type sites, or would that
What's the name of it?
PULSE.
Never heard of it.
I looked it up on the web and I got MD and it tells you how to take your pulse of your heart.
Yeah, I've never heard of pulse.
You're on Android?
Yeah. I'm an Android, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, pulse isn't. I don't know why you're being asked to do that. Pulse is an SMS app. It's a text messaging app.
There's another Pulse that is an SSL VPN.
Oh, okay then. Maybe it's that one.
Well, I looked it up on the on Google, and it says it's like a software that you can download, and then it lists its. I don't know if it's for commercials or not, but it's just I'd like to get this message off my phone. Every time I turn it on, it's or you're on doing something and you get this beep and this drop down load pulse. Now, I don't know how they get in, but you're right, it is Android.
You've already installed something that wants you to install that other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've got some app that you installed or could be bloatware built into. Who made your phone?
It's a Samsung.
Oh, yeah. Samsung has a lot of that
bloatware,
yeah. Involved in it. You may be able to turn it off somewhere in the settings. You may be able to trace it back to another app that you installed. Every once in a while, I go in and remove some apps, stuff that I haven't used in a while, and see how that changes things on my phone. But if you can think back to what you installed just before you started getting those messages, that'll give you a clue as to where those messages
are
coming from.
And again, make a list of the stuff that you uninstall. That way, if you got to reinstall it, you know what app you got to put back on there.
Because I thought that I talked to Google once, and they claimed that, she said we've never been hacked and we're secure. And blah,
you
blah,
can't
blah,
talk
blah.
To
I
Google.
I thought the cloud was, the greatest thing for security purposes.
Well, no, but first, as Steve just said, you can't talk to Google, so I don't know who you called, but.
It wasn't Google.
Yeah.
The other thing is something you install, that's essentially an ad. And many apps are free, with air quotes, free because they show you ads. And those ads are getting more and more intrusive. So it's likely that some app you installed is showing you that ad. And the only way to get rid of it is to uninstall that specific app. That's why I'm saying if you go in through and install an app and then see if that did it and then uninstall another app and see if that did it, That's unfortunately the long slow way to make it work.
Can you list apps by the recently installed?
Yeah, that's a very good question.
Yeah,
can you by what was installed last?
I think so.
I don't know. I'm about to
look. Go by date.
I know they're alphabetical,
right?
But can't you sort by the date?
I was going to ask you that after it was by the date, because the last two that I did was the NFL, and then there was the Chicago Bears app.
There's an app that will list by recently installed.
Yeah, it's probably true. Well, it certainly could be one of those last two apps, particularly something like the Chicago Bears. Whoever put that app out is I'm sure, looking to make some kind of money somewhere.
Yeah. But at any rate, just long story short, the Pulse is, whether it's bugging me or not, is that anything that's any good on the horizon, or something new that you guys have heard about, or is it more for like commercial businesses?
And a lot depends on which Pulse it is, because we find a dozen different things called Pulse.
Right, and most of them are not useful at all.
Gotcha. Okay, that's what I figured. That's what I wanted to hear.
There you
all
go.
Right, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, you really have to be very careful whenever you install an app. One of the things you can do on the App Store is you can see whether or not it contains ads and whether or not it contains in-app purchases. And in either of those cases, you want to be aware that you've downloaded something that has ads in it. Mostly, they just show up in the bottom of the screen. They don't annoy you too much.
They're not bad.
But they're getting worse, and they're getting to be like what just happened to Ed. They suddenly pop up on your screen and
take over the whole screen.
And cover the whole screen.
Yeah, or if you go to just do something, all of a sudden it'll flash it up there and block what you were trying to go to. And then, you know, you've got to listen to that ad for 15, 20 seconds.
Right.
Apple's adding a new category on its App Store review descriptions, what they do with your data.
Oh, very nice.
Because normally that only comes up in the license agreement after you've downloaded and installed it.
Right.
And no one reads it.
Right. Yeah. Those are the kind of things that you need, again, you need to be aware. You can't, it's not happy-go-lucky anymore and hasn't been since the 70s. The 70s. Never mind. Anyway, the point here is you are a system administrator and you have to take responsibility for everything you put on your phone. And or your desktop or your laptop or your tablet or your watch. I don't care what it is.
And you got some ride-alongs that come in sometimes.
And that's, you know, if you've got when you're installing an app, particularly under Windows, you will get a screen that tells you, do you want to install other things? However they phrase it, they're saying, do you want to install other apps, ride-alongs?
Mm-hmm.
And I always say no. But as Davis said many times, people get click happy.
Yep.
And they want to get to that app. So they're just yes, 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 yes to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Take a half a minute, read the screens, and say no to the stuff you don't want.
It'll still install
the
99%. They will 99% of the time, they will still always install that particular program that you're trying to install. It just won't add on that other stuff by you clicking on it and say no. Usually it's just a little box you got to uncheck so that it goes to the next screen and it doesn't put in all that other junk.
Yep, that's exactly right. You really have to pay some attention. You really have to slow down is basically all you have to do. Just slow down. You will get to that hot new app you're desperate to run.
Mm-hmm.
It'll only take another 10 seconds to keep your machine secure and safe and unbloated. It's one of the things I most love about Linux. Nothing gets installed that I don't want to install. It's that simple.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Nothing gets installed that I don't want installed. I can uninstall. There are. That's of course not 100% true. There are a bunch of small applications that install as part of the operating system, of course. But if I don't want one of them, I can uninstall it.
Yep.
You know, I just so Nothing gets installed that I don't at some point want.
Especially in the early days, even now, you get your new phone and you start looking at, oh, that's neat, and download an app. Oh, that's neat, and download an app. Oh, that's neat, and download an app. Suddenly your phone is full.
Right.
With 100 apps you used once and have never used again, but are still there in the background tracking your location and reading the websites you go to and doing all this other stuff.
So, again, as part of, you know, write down, create a site book, what app did I install, the date, the time, what does it do?
Yep.
And then if, you know, you install an app and a day later you start getting ads, you can go back and say, what's new? Oh, yeah, yep. I installed the Bears, some sports team app. There you are.
And it didn't tell me it was going to do that.
Right. That's the thing that makes me craziest, when they simply don't tell you.
Or they couch it in marketing words that average people don't understand.
Right. I try very hard not to install anything I don't absolutely need. And I try very hard to pay strict attention to what the screens all say, mm-hmm. and say yes or no.
Take your time
on that. And again, most of the operating systems, well, both the phone operating systems will say, you know, this wants to do this. Do you want to allow it, not allow it, allow it only once? What, you know, what do you want to do here? Ask me every time.
Well, that's
just do it, you know. Yep. So you really need to pay attention and think. I know that's the hard part. And think when you're installing an app, read every screen,
mm-hmm.
contemplate the consequences of whatever choices you make before you make them.
Yeah. And one thing that's getting a little annoying in the Apple community is every now and then it will pop up and ask you again, do you still want this app to have access to your Bluetooth?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know it did. No, I don't.
Right.
Yep. Or, yeah, I do. Stop asking me. Well, every couple of months we're going to ask you again just to be safe.
Yep. Well, and I, as a system administrator, I would rather it do that.
Heck yeah.
But people will come in, why does it keep asking for my password? To make sure it's still you buying that program.
I've turned on two-factor authentication, which is not perfect, and it's not an end-all, be-all, yada, yada, yada. But I've turned on two-factor authentication everywhere I can, so that I get a notification. My beloved daughter, we have a family account for Netflix. And I actually checked with them. She doesn't live with us, but she's my daughter. And they said it's okay. She's fam. She said, how many kids you got? I said, one. She said, okay.
Adopt a few more. And
yeah, right, exactly. So she said, okay, you know, you've got the high Netflix, so you can have three people on at once or whatever that is. So go ahead. And so I did. And then she just bought a new, you'll be happy to know, she bought a new MacBook.
She went to the dark side?
She's been on the dark side.
I thought you taught her better.
Well, did she get space gray?
I don't know. I have no idea. But she got, she's got a BA in art history.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she goes for her master's degree, which she's in the process of prepping to do, she's only working to make enough money eventually, hopefully, get into grad school somewhere. She said, everybody's got, you know, in the art world, mm-hmm. everybody's got Macs. So,
yeah.
Well,
of the two-factor, if you can use an authenticator, the Google Authenticator app.
I use that all the time.
Yeah. That's much, much better than using text messaging as authentication, as that second factor, because it's really easy for the bad guys to spoof a text message.
Yep. But I did. I'd forgotten. I mean, it was like a day later. And this is, you know, I'm just a normal person. I don't think about this. But I suddenly got this pop-up. Somebody wants to sign into your Netflix account. And I've never seen this machine before. I texted my daughter. I said, are you trying to put Netflix on your MacBook? Yes, Dad. Okay, give me a second.
and hope it didn't time out in the long time.
Yeah, right. Because
those codes are usually only good for a few minutes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But yeah, the Authenticator app, there's a Google Authenticator and there's an Apple Authenticator. And you can add as many authenticating services to, that's not the, it's because Google is the authenticating. Yeah. So you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So as many websites or whatever you want to call them to that as you want. So you can do it through Facebook, or you can do it through UPS for the things that you get from them, and you know, pretty much all of those. And that is much more secure, although not 100%. Nothing is 100%, but it is much more secure than text messages, as Steve said.
Just text is sort of the lowest common denominator, so a lot of places use that. It's annoying that the banks are still using text messaging. I haven't seen many of them that will do. They'll do text or email, neither of which is secure.
Right.
I have yet to find one of my banks that uses an authenticator app.
Right, and they all should. If you have no authenticator app, download either the Google one or the Apple one, depending on what.
Well, the Apple Authenticator is built into the OSs. So
excellent.
When you go to sign into a service, you use the sign in with Apple, and then it will set it up to use the Apple Authenticator.
I can't remember if it came with my phone. Although I have a Google Pixel. So going back to bloatware, there's none.
Yeah.
First.
Right. Yeah.
None. And it may have already had Google Authenticator on it. I just don't remember.
That's one thing I have loved as of this past couple of weeks on my Pixel phone, is I am getting so many GD phone calls about Medicare.
Yeah.
They're coming in here and there, and I love to sit there, hit the screen button.
Mm-hmm.
And it screens the phone call for me, and then they usually hang up, and I mark it as a, you know, add it to the spam.
Yep.
And it is so cool, because someone said, well, you got to get that? And I go, nope, don't know it. I let my phone do it.
I've been getting a lot of calls about my phone warrant, my car warranty, too.
Yeah.
My car is 11 years old. There is no warranty.
Maybe they'll sell you one.
Maybe they'll sell me one.
Well, I'm getting it still on my old Ford that I sold.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you as we now continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
Still.
We are still Sound Bites. Unbelievable, but true. Okay. And now we've heard from Microsoft with their 0 day. We've heard from Apple with their 0 day.
Who's next?
It must be Google. Google has released a security update for its Chrome web browser that patches 10 security bugs, including 1 0-day vulnerability that is currently actively exploited in the wild. Yes, it's 0 day exploits day here at Soundbites. The 0 day was discovered by Google's threat analysis group, the same one you've heard about twice already, a security team at Google tasked with tracking threat actors and their ongoing operations. In typical Google fashion, details about the 0 day and group exploiting the bug have not been made public, as a way to allow Chrome users more time to install the updates and prevent other threat actors from developing their own exploits for the same 0 day. However, in a short change log, Google said this 0 day resides in V8, the Chrome component that handles JavaScript code. Chrome users are advised to update their browser to version 86.0.4240.183. They're using Apple numbering here, or later. This is the second Chrome 0 day that Google found exploited in the wild in the past 2 weeks. On October 20th, Google also released a security update for Chrome with a patch to patch a 0 day in Chrome's free type font rendering library. This Chrome 0 day was utilized together with a Windows 0 day. So you needed both at that point. So those of you on Linux or Macs may not have actually even needed that. that patch. The Chrome Zero Day was used to execute malicious code inside Chrome, while the Windows Zero Day was used to elevate the code's privileges and attack the underlying Windows OS. Microsoft is expected to patch this Zero Day on November 10th. Just a week away. No, just a few days away now.
Yeah, 3 days away.
Yeah. During the company's next patch Tuesday. Google didn't clarify if these two Zero Days were abused by the same threat actor. But wait.
There's more.
There's more. Google also released patches for a third Zero Day. Unlike the first two, this one impacted only Chrome for Android versions. This Zero Day is a heap buffer overflow vulnerability in Chrome for Android user interface component. Users can protect themselves by updating Chrome for Android to version 86.0.4240.185. So, is everything up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Give us a text at 585-205-8887. And yeah, it's the moral of today is if you get an update notification, update.
The trick is knowing the security updates you need from the feature upgrades you probably don't want to cause more problems.
Yeah. Right. Sorting out the two.
Yeah. One of the Google Zero Day guys is Tavis Ormandy, and he gets a lot of interesting tweets. There was one where he tweeted that he was in the shower and had this revelation about how to hack something, and he found a bug. And so the joke going around for a while is, Tavis needs to take more showers.
Yeah.
And it's neat that they look at their own code as well as other people's code, too.
Right, right.
From being at Google.
One of the things that has made Linux so secure is the incredible number of people who look at the code every single day.
Yeah.
And it's not just professional programmers. It's amateur programmers as well. There's millions and millions of people who put in bug reports and bug fixes. The nice thing about Linux is, of course, you can not only report a bug, you can actually submit a fix, which is then vetted before it's installed. And obviously, you know, but and that's one of the reasons that Linux remains more secure. No operating system is secure on any device, but more secure than some others, because those patches come from so many people who are looking at so many different ways of doing things. And in addition, they are rolled out as they are found. So you can get an update, you know, it's rare, but you could get three updates a day. The other beauty about Linux is that you don't reboot when you get an update, unless it's a kernel update.
Right.
So, you know, when I get an update, I just click the go ahead and update button, and in a couple of minutes, I'm done. You know, and it happens in the background, and I don't have to do anything unless the program is actually running. So when I had the Chrome browser update, I had to shut down Chrome for the update to take. That's fair. That happens in every operating system, too.
Well, I don't know about you, but when I was going to school, you know, and taking the language and even at Kodak, what we would do is because we'd get there, you know, you're doing part of the code and you'd run into an error. And, you know, you could sit there and stare at that those pages of code till the cows come home.
Yeah.
And usually, we'd do it within our team. You'd somebody'd say, I'm having a problem here. You want to take a look at it? And we'd, one of us or, you know, somebody else come over and say, yeah, that line right there, you're missing this comment
very
or that.
Very hard to find your own bugs.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's the way, we had a great team. There was seven of us, and we'd rotate around. You know, somebody's running into an issue, or somebody's trying to figure out how to get somebody else pulled in. Just a different pair of eyes or a different way of thinking makes for better programming. It's not that, you know, none of us had attitudes, well, I'm, you know, the best programmer they got here. We were a team, and everybody pulled together to try to help improve the products, and it did. I mean, we wound up getting accolades all the time on the stuff we were putting out, and it was all due to teamwork, not one person. No one person can do it all like that. And it's just like we're saying with a lot of your other stuff that you do, you know, it takes a team effort to do it.
Yep. And that's one of the things about Linux is there are so many people millions and millions of people checking the code all the time. And not just for security purposes, but for bug fixes.
Yeah, all the way around. There is no one perfect solution.
Right.
It's different things that can happen. You know, like they say, they try to, with the best intentions, to add additional features.
Yep.
But with those extra features can come holes or bugs that they have to be fixed or patched. Because it's not like back in the old days when, you know, say the early 80s. That you had one box sitting on a desktop. It had 2 5-and-a-quarter floppies on it, and it didn't do much of anything.
Right.
Now, you know, with all the different CD-ROMs, DVDs, video cards, motherboards, memory, all these other configurations, trying to catch it all? Good luck.
Right.
That's got more holes in it than Swiss cheese ever thought to have.
There's an estimate that Windows 10 has about 50 million lines of code.
Yeah.
So that's
probably conservative.
At least 50 million accidents waiting to happen.
That's exactly right. No human being really understands anything more complex than a lever.
Yeah.
So 50 million lines of code.
And that's only, you know, for the DLLs. The DLLs can then be linked to other programs or, say, like printer files and everything else. That, you know, it ties itself to, or if you install other things, they all get tied into Windows so that it knows it. So it's probably.
There's a Wired story from 2015 that all of Google's software has 2 billion lines of code.
Right. But also 100 million more people.
Yeah. And what it does. Right. I mean, you know, sitting there, you know, I turned on, a couple other folks. To the Google Photos.
Yeah.
And they go, well, how could you do it? Does that cost a lot? I go, let's see. How much does free cost? I go, what?
Yeah.
I go, that's it. Free. And it goes up there. So I helped them set it up. A couple days later, I ran into them. They go, this is the best thing since sliced bread. Why didn't you tell me about it sooner?
It's your fault.
Yeah. You know, we've been preaching it for umpteen years here on the radio.
You haven't seen the TV commercials? That's how big it is. They have TV commercials.
Yeah, right.
And that's why I've told them. You know, I says, well, then tune into our show. You'll learn a lot.
Exactly right.
You know, we've been doing it for 30 years, and we try to steer people in the right direction. So we recommend stuff that we think will work for them. We help solve problems, and we've been having fun doing that for 30 years now.
Yep. One of the things that Linux does now is they have programs called – they have a new way to install software called Snap, which is essentially containerized. So every program has all the things it needs to run. So it doesn't need DLL equivalents or any of that stuff.
Self-contained package?
They're completely self-contained.
Oh, sweet.
I'm not sure I'm a huge fan yet.
It's new.
But it's new, and I'm playing with it.
And competing DLLs has been the bane of Windows for 30 years.
Right, yeah. Right. I've been playing with some Snap packages. The beautiful thing is they are also, they say, and I haven't been playing with them long enough to know, self-updating. So they're completely self-contained, and they can self-update. So you'll not even see anything going on in the background. That's maybe good, maybe bad.
I was going to say, because sometimes, you know, like Steve was saying before, there's some updates that, yeah, you want to go ahead and do, and then others that can muck things up
but turn your machine into a brick. But if it's a containerized app,
mm-hmm.
and it's only updating that app, the only thing you're going to muck up is that one app.
As long as it doesn't get its fingers into
the... That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's containerized, and so it cannot get outside its box. And so that works out actually quite nicely. So I'm playing with Snaps. I think they're much bigger than other programs because, you know, they have to contain their entire environment.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, everybody's got 16 gig or 8 gig at least or...
Well, that was the big programming goal in the early 80s was
small as possible.
Small, self-contained apps. I mean, when I was working on the Sun OSs on our Sparks, you want a word processor? Well, you pull the text editor app here, you pull the spelling check app over there, you pull the font app over there, and you basically build your own word processor from the specific pieces you want. So each little tiny piece of code can be relatively bug-free by itself.
Dr. Dobbs Journal was a magazine many years ago, and but the proper name was Dr. Dobbs Journal of Computer Calisthenics and Orthodontia, and the subtitle was Running Light Without Overbyte. B-Y-T-E.
Cool.
And the basic idea was every month they would say, you know, people would write in and say, hey, I figured out how to do this addition or subtraction or whatever operation in 3 bytes instead of 4 bytes.
Yep.
You know, and people would then, oh my God, we have to put that in our program. It's great.
Yep. You just cut the usage by 25%.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
All right. We got... somebody that texted in for you, Nick. It says, hey, Nick, this is Hishman texting you from San Jose, enjoying the update security news from you and your team. And, of course, you haven't changed because you have always rooting for Linux in a smiley face. Miss you. As the original 300 members,
Hisham. I was one of the. We had buttons. We made Hisham was one of my minions. One of the students who worked for me at RIT many years ago. Hisham, it is wonderful to hear from you. How great!
And he also said one thing. Oh yeah, and I'm not trying to edit the Windows registry. LOL.
Yeah, and he was. Yeah, he knew my wrath.
Not anymore.
Yeah, not anymore.
Not after the incident.
You're right. Exactly. Oh, well, yeah. That was still, Dave still does that. But he's the guy now. He's got my job. So he can, if he screws it up, it's his problem.
Uh-oh.
He can fix it. But Hisham was, Hisham was the first person I ever met who filled up all 300 slots in his phone contact list.
Wow.
Huh?
Filled it up.
Seriously?
Yeah.
And with so legit it, ones?
Yes.
Oh
and
my.
So, you know, we were, the first question everybody had is, I'm in the 300, right? So we actually, I had a bunch of buttons made that said, I'm in the 300. And we all wore them.
Oh, that's
cool. I love Hisham. It's so good to hear from him. Thank you, Hisham. Glad to hear from you. Glad to hear you listening. I hope your life is as magnificent as it should be. Thank you.
And Jose.
And what,
San Jose.
What was the first year that was officially dedicated as the year of Linux?
Oh, I think 1984.
Yeah. 98 seems to be the...
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. But, they're saying now, year of the Linux desktop, it's here.
Yeah.
Because of Chromebooks.
Yeah, we just don't know
it. Yeah.
Right.
It's not called Linux.
It's not called Linux. Yeah. And the same thing is true here. The Macs are essentially underneath a Unix variant.
Yeah.
As is Linux.
But
so.
we're BSD. That's better. That was first.
I don't want to be the one to break it
Are
to you.
Are you a BSD or a System 5?
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, good
East
one.
Coast. So, we're on the East Coast. How did we get to be BSD over here?
Yeah, right. Well, you're on the East Coast, but Apple isn't.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right.
And you got to go from the point of origin.
Yeah.
Right. Remember... Only two things came out of Berkeley in the 60s, Unix and LSD. Yeah. This is not a coincidence.
And like they say, if you can remember the 60s, you weren't there.
That's a truth. That's a truth. But yeah, so BSD is the Berkeley standard distribution. It was, man, did I dig that out. And it was an early version of Unix. Linux was based on Unix. Minix was based on Unix, and Linux was based on Minix. I don't want to go there. But the point is, they're all the same family. They're all the CPM.
Mm-hmm.
And DOS were based essentially on Unix.
And the slashes went the other way.
The slashes went the other way.
And it's not a copy. The slashes go the other way.
The slashes go the other way, and they reversed some of the parameters.
Yeah.
So when you did a PIP program, you put the destination first. Yep. And then the source, but the fact is that there are really two basic underlying code bases: the Unix, Linux, BSD, et cetera, crowd, and the Windows crowd. and Windows is still based on NT, the NT kernel. Yes, that's the same kernel they always had.
When it was new technology.
When it was new technology, that's what NT stood for. And so those are the two basic operating systems. And iOS underneath is a Linux type variant, as is Android, as is Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it's everybody and Windows.
Yeah.
Pretty much how that works. And you're finding, and even, oh man, even Microsoft is going Windows, is going Linux these days. They're part of the Linux consortium. They're putting out code for it. There's been rumors that the next version of Windows will be Linux with the Windows GUI on top of it, which you can already have.
Yeah.
There's 50 variants of the Windows GUI available for Linux. It makes it look exactly like Windows, and you can even run Windows code on it. Well, the Chromebook now runs four different operating systems. It runs the Chrome OS, it runs Android, it runs Linux, and shortly it will run Windows.
And that's one of the biggest fears about the Apple Silicon-based Macs that are expected to be announced next week. Apple's got a new event coming up next week. Because it's not x86, it won't be able to run native Windows.
Right.
But Parallels already has a remote version of it.
Right.
So,
and every app that you use will either have to be emulated, which will slow it down, or rewritten.
But the way Apple's written their compilers now, that the theory is you take your existing code and you click the next checkbox in the compiler, and it will, if you've done well with your program.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. How well did it work? How well does the compiler work?
And that's why Apple's got the development platform out now.
Right.
A Mac Mini with an iPad processor in it for developers to test their programs on.
Right. All right. That's it. This music tells us that you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense, and we're done for another week. I am tickled pink. I can't get over hearing from Hisham. That's great. At any rate, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I should probably thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank each and every one of you, particularly Hisham, who called in this week. And thank you again to everyone who was kind and generous enough to become a member of this station and a member of the Soundbites family to make sure that we can stay on the air for another 6 months. That's great. So thanks to all of you. And we'll be back in next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours. Be good to each other, will you?
When you underwrite the programming of Jazz 90.1, you make your business known to people who enjoy jazz as much as you do. Your on-air message is short and tasteful, making it easy to remember, with basic information about your business, including how to reach you. Underwriting is economical, too. To find out more about underwriting Jazz 90.1, call 966-2660. That's 966-2660.